Quest for Truth, Episode 266.
Quest for Truth, presented by Protectors of the Book and HPN. Now located at life-truth.com, here are your podcast host deputies, Keith Heltzley and Nathan Caldwell.
All right, here we go. And welcome, everyone. This is your host, Keith. It's time once again for Quest for Truth. I have a solo episode today. That's actually something different planned, but it didn't quite work out to get people in front of the microphone for a discussion. So what I did is, last year, we ran a couple of series where we addressed top things that atheists and non-believers really say about Christianity. And I had a few left in my archive of stuff. So here we have three of the top things, in no particular order, that atheists and non-believers have about Christianity. The one deals with thinking for yourself and challenging religion, which actually, in my opinion, is kind of good, but not exactly the way that's presented. The other two seem to take valid, logical situations, but they don't apply those situations correctly. But anyway, to find the whole snippet, which I'm not going to link to, but I believe it's called 10 Things Non-Believers Say, something like that. Now, if you Google it, you'll get all 10 of the segments that we've addressed, and these will be the last ones that we'll do, and then we'll move on to other types of worldviews that's out there and address them.
But first,
my name is Andy Olson, and I want to tell you about Echozoi Radio. Echozoi Radio is a podcast outreach of Echozoi Ministries. Every month, I find a knowledgeable guest to talk about an important and interesting topic that affects the church today. We carefully balance the discussions of positive, God-glorifying doctrines of Orthodox Christianity from a mostly Reformed point of view with exposés of heresy, false teaching, and poor practice that goes on throughout the church today. You can find us at echozoe.com. That's echozoe.com.
Religion makes people feel guilty. I would say it certainly should.
You know, I get letters every day that I never got before. And those letters are from kids around the world and also from people in small towns who tell me, and I'm just so happy I saw this, or I saw the Unbelievers, or I read your book, because I realize I'm not a bad person for asking these questions. I'm not evil. And that is, to me, something I really hadn't appreciated before, that religion has usurped this notion of morality. So that if you just say, just saying, you know, I don't buy it, automatically is equivalent to the saying, I'm not a good person. And that, to me, is the underlying most immoral aspect of religion. It tries to have a monopoly on morality and ethics. What it does is it makes people feel guilty for thinking for themselves. And I can attest to that from just the vast and every single day. I'm amazed at that. And I hadn't appreciated that as an evil before I actually started getting labeled and people wrote to me. So they did a further study and they questioned people who claimed the Christian box. They said, do you believe in the virgin birth? Do you believe in transubstantiation? Do you believe in this? No. Why do you call yourself Christian? Because I like to think of myself as a good person. And I think most people call themselves Christians because they think if they don't, they'll be labeled as bad people.
But let's review what is being said here. He talks about getting letters of appreciation all around the world affirming that they realize they're not bad people, they're not evil, because they've asked a question about their religion. And I would say, you know, the sooner you question your religion, the better. The sooner you express those doubts and explore legitimate answers to them, the better. Because you just might find they hold up. You'd be willing to accept even the solutions to arguments that you don't like, because sometimes the truth is hard to take and it's not always likable.
That religion has usurped this notion of morality.
And the word usurped means to take by force. The notion of morality. I will challenge that and say no. Religion has not usurped morality. I would say non-religion has usurped morality. Religion, I don't really like to use that word, but for lack of a better one, sets the standard. It sets the high standard for morality. It does not usurp. It never has usurped. Things that are not religion usurp.
Just saying, you know, I don't buy it, automatically is equivalent to the saying, I'm not a good person.
No, just saying you don't buy it means that you have legitimate doubts. You have legitimate questions.
And that to me is the underlying most immoral aspect of religion. It tries to have a monopoly on morality and ethics.
And that's the other way around.
So they did a further study and they questioned people who claimed the Christian box. They said, do you believe in the virgin birth? Do you believe in transubstantiation? Do you believe this? No. Why do you call yourself Christian? Because I like to think of myself as a good person.
Well, if you don't believe in those things, that's fine. Everyone has doubts. Everyone has questions. For one thing, transubstantiation does not ever anywhere appear in the Bible. It is a Catholic doctrinal teaching. And it has long since been abandoned, usually even by Catholics. It's the belief that when you take communion, it actually turns into the body and blood of Christ within your stomach. No, nobody believes that. And the Bible doesn't teach that. The virgin birth, well, it does teach that. And it is difficult to take. But, you know, even if those passages in the Bible were not there, to me, it doesn't change the fact that Jesus died and was buried and rose from the grave. It does enforce belief in his deity, but even if those passages weren't there, it's not a deal breaker to say that Jesus was not divine. But it's good that you question that. It's good if you say, I don't believe that, because it doesn't make you a bad person. What makes us a bad person is sin, but this guy never goes there. They say, well, why don't you believe that? It's comfortable, basically. They don't want to have a bad label. In other words, you are a cultural Christian. There's another word for that. It's called hypocrite. And the sooner you come to grips with that and either say, no, I don't believe this, then stop being a hypocrite and stop saying you're Christian. There's nothing wrong with that. At least now you know where you stand, and so does everyone else. And if you're going to continue to call yourself a Christian, then you really do need to come to grips with some important questions. But having questions does not make you a bad person. Sin is what makes you a bad person. And having sin and not addressing those questions was going to send you on the road to condemnation. And please don't go there. Deal with the questions and find your answers. And hopefully you'll find answers and stay within the Christian realm.
Ephesians chapter 4 verse 25. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another for his name's sake.
What's up, everybody? I'm Jamal Bandy, the host of the Prescribed Truth Podcast, where I seek to distribute the truth that the doctor prescribes to the church and the world today. The Lord graciously brought me out of a cult in 2010, saved me in 2013, and in 2017, Prescribed Truth began. My mission has been to spread the truth of God's word while refuting dangerous lies affecting most churches and the culture at large from a biblical and reformed perspective. Join me on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for the live recording of the podcast on YouTube, and download the audio version wherever podcasts can be found, including the Christian Podcast Community. If you would like to know more about Prescribed Truth, please visit my website at prescribedtruth.com. And remember, this world is full of errors, but the only thing that the doctor prescribes is truth. Blessings.
Knowing God in the patterns.
I'm going to start off with a thought experiment. Imagine you're a hominid on the plains of Africa, 3.5 million years ago. You're a tiny little Australopithecine afarensis, little brain. Your name is Lucy. Thank you. A lot of people in the Midwest don't get that. Evolution? What? Not that Lucy, the other one. And you hear a rustle in the grass. Is it a dangerous predator, or is it just the wind? If you think that the rustle in the grass is a dangerous predator, and it turns out it's just the wind, you've made a type one error in cognition. You've a false positive. You thought the wind was connected to something, and it wasn't. A was connected to B, and it wasn't. So that's a false positive, but that's relatively harmless. But if you think that the rustle in the grass is just the wind, and it turns out it's a dangerous predator, your lunch. Congratulations, you've just been given a Darwin Award for taking yourself out of the gene pool early before reproducing. And we are the descendants of those who are most likely to make type 1 errors, false positives, versus type 2 errors, false negatives. That is to say, why can't you just stay in the grass and collect enough data to get the answer right? And the answer is that predators don't wait around for prey animals to collect more data. That's why they stalk and sneak up on their prey animals, so they can't get enough data. So we evolved the propensity to make snap decisions and make one kind of error more likely than another kind of error. And that kind of error, that false positive, that's superstition. That's magical thinking. That's assuming A is connected to B. It's a true pattern, and it isn't, and you're wrong. That's the basis of finding false patterns like God's. Now, what's the difference between the wind and a dangerous predator? The wind is an inanimate force. A dangerous predator is an intentional agent, and his intention is to eat me, and that can't be good. So what we also do, in addition to finding these meaningful patterns, is infuse in them agency. That is, it's alive, it's real, it has intention, and its intention is not good, so I better assume it's real. And this is the basis of animism and spiritism and polytheism and monotheism and the belief in angels and aliens and demons and spirits and poltergeists and gods. Gods are invisible agents who run the world, who control things, who create these patterns, who are these patterns that we use to explain things. All cultures everywhere in the world have created God beliefs. Gods with these intentional, that are intentional agents.
Now this guy, he doesn't make any sense to me. I'll tell you why. On one hand, he really does. He makes good logical sense, but he doesn't make good sense when it comes to critical thinking. He introduces this thought experiment.
I'm going to start off with a thought experiment. Imagine you're a hominid on the plains of Africa, 3.5 million years ago. You're a tiny little Australopithecine afarensis, little brain. Your name is Lucy. Thank you. A lot of people in the Midwest don't get that. Evolution? What?
Evolution? What? Funny joke. Yeah, I get it. Whatever. But the real thought experiment comes when he says, you hear a rustle in the grass. Is it wind or is it a predator? This sets up what's called type 1 errors and type 2 errors. I learned about this years ago in my short-lived college career in what was a critical thinking class. It had nothing to do with religion or religious morality. What it did have to do with is making the good decision all the time. And before you can make the good decision all the time, you have to make type 1 errors. You have to. Because otherwise, as you said...
If you think that the rustle in the grass is just the wind and it turns out it's a dangerous predator, your lunch.
But let's look at this. Type 1 error. You think there's a danger, but it's not. You know, if it's not, that's good. Even if it was not real, because you lived to see another day. And you repeat that loop of making that error until you figure out more details about, oh, okay, predator or not predator. But it's better to make this error than a type 2, which is the false negative, which means I thought it was the wind, I thought I was safe, but here comes, you know, bad predator. And so if you're going to make an error, the false positive is what you want.
Why can't you just stay in the grass and collect enough data to get the answer right? And the answer is that predators don't wait around for prey animals to collect more data. That's why they stalk and sneak up on their prey animals, so they can't get enough data. So we evolved the propensity to make snap decisions and make one kind of error more likely than another kind of error. And that kind of error, that false positive, that's superstition. That's magical thinking.
And I thought, you know, you might be snobbery with that, but if that false positive, that quote-unquote magical thinking makes you live to see another day, then thank goodness for magical thinking.
That's assuming A is connected to B. It's a true pattern, and it isn't, and you're wrong. That's the basis of finding false patterns like God's.
But I'd rather be mistaken and be superstitious or thought superstitious and live to see another day while I watch you, a person who thinks it's a comfortable, cozy, grassy field, and then get passed upon in the end.
Now, what's the difference between the wind and a dangerous predator? The wind is an inanimate force. A dangerous predator is an intentional agent.
And he goes on to be snobby against intelligent agency. And he says, I'll try to summarize. If it's an agency, it means it's alive, it's real, has an intent, which is to eat me, and it can't be good. Well, actually, possibly, there are two kinds of intelligent agencies. He did not say that. You do have the kind that wants to eat you, and you have an intelligent agency that created this beautiful grassy field for you to live in. So while you're making your false positives, you need to learn, is it predator or grass? And then you need to know, if it is agency, is it bad agent or good agent? So there's a lot of critical thinking. There's a lot of good critical thinking teaching here. There really is. But his application to saying, oh, false positives are bad because that represents superstition. False positives are bad because that represents a smart agency like God. No, it's, even if you make those mistakes, it's better to make that mistake than to think you're cozy and safe in a grassy, windy field and get pounced on.
And this is the basis of animism and spiritism and polytheism and monotheism and the belief in angels and aliens and demons and spirits and poltergeists and gods.
That may very well be. Invisible agents control things. All cultures around the world have created God beliefs. This is all true. But I'd rather have that if it helps me be safe than no God at all. But if you study the Bible and read it, it says there's only one God. It doesn't say there's not other spiritual, supernatural things. It just says that there is one God who is Lord of Lords, God of Gods. And so when you, what you want to do is apply these false positives until you filter through all the nonsense gods and find the right one. Yeah. So, yeah, he uses good critical theory, but he puts a bad spin on it when you start saying false positives are bad because of God. No, false positives are always good because you live to see another day.
Can you prove that God is a Trinity? Can you prove that Jesus is God? Can you defend the Christian faith? And what is it that Christians truly believe? The new book by Andrew Rappaport, What Do We Believe, will answer those questions and more. Some people just don't understand what the church is today, but this book will go through the history and meaning of the church and what's more important than to understand man's sinfulness and God's salvation. Get your copy at whatdowebelievebook.com or at the strivingforeternity.org store.
This one I call debunking functional design.
Think about this. If life was designed, functional complexity of the cell is amazing. The eye is amazing. Look at it. Like if you saw a watch on the floor, how did it get there? It had to have a designer. Because your premise is that functional complexity cannot spontaneously all by itself come into existence. It had to be designed by, a watch is probably designed by a company and it has a history of trial and error and multiple designers, many of whom are dead, let's say. But in any event, you say, how did that get there? It had to be designed by something even more complex, more fascinating. Anything that is complex enough to define like a watch or a human being or an eyeball has to be at least as complex or more complex than it. If it is true, think about this. This is very important in my migration away from faith. If it is true that functional complexity requires a designer, then the mind of a God also requires a designer. Isn't the mind of a God beautiful? Doesn't it function? Isn't it complex? Doesn't he have desires? Doesn't he have plans? Isn't he this amazing big, is he just a big blob of random nothingness? Or is he an amazingly organized genius of a beautiful, wise being up there? That complexity, by the argument of design, also would require a designer. If it doesn't, then throw away your argument. You're just believing by faith. The design argument either stands or it doesn't. So you can't invoke a designer to explain complexity who's more complex than the thing that it designed. That's circular reasoning. That's called begging the question. What you're doing is you're just explaining one mystery with another mystery.
I don't know who the guy is, but he's talking about
functional complexity of the cell is amazing. The eye is amazing. Look at it. Like if you saw a watch on the floor, how did it get there? It had to have a designer.
And I'm with that. And then he says something about,
a watch is probably designed by a company and it has a history of trial and error and multiple designers, many of whom are dead, let's say.
It's not just one person, although a person would be more complex than a watch. It's probably a company or a team, some of whom have died. I don't understand how that makes it less complex. In fact, the more entities involved would make it multiplied by that much more complexity. So I don't see how not having individual is a factor there.
If it is true that functional complexity requires a designer, then the mind of a God also requires a designer. Just a big blob of random nothingness, or is it an amazingly organized genius of a beautiful, wise being up there? That complexity, by the argument of design, also would require a designer.
Right there is where his presentation of his argument breaks down. But the kind of circular logic he just used to support his own argument is a thing that's called infinite regression. Okay, if God made us, who made God? Who made that God? Who made that God? It's, you can get an idea of how that works by, and I'm sure you've done this or seen it done, you put two mirrors facing each other and you stand between them and voila, there are an infinite number of you. So how do you prove which one is you? As long as you are in the loop, you can just pick one at a time and eliminate it, or pick groups of the image of you at a time and eliminate it. And if you're going to follow his train of thought that God has to be a created being, that's would be his answer to diffuse the infinite loop of infinite regression. The other way to diffuse that loop is to say, well, there is a creator that is an uncaused original. That would be God. So God can't be part of the definition, which is the definition of circular logic. Your answer is in the definition. So if you're trying to prove God, you can't have God in the definition, so take God out from between the two mirrors, and there you go. You've just identified the real God. Okay, that's why we did. Those are the two main ways to diffuse that. The main point, whenever your argument reaches circular logic, namely infinite regression, You've basically just killed your argument because you've exposed that your own argument has fallacies. Now, this guy doesn't appear to be willing to accept God as the answer, although it would be a legitimate solution, logically, to his logical proposition.
If it doesn't, then throw away your argument. You're just believing by faith. The design argument either stands or it doesn't. So you can't invoke a designer to explain complexity who's more complex than the thing that it designed. That's circular reasoning. That's called begging the question.
And I would say, yeah, if you believe in God, it's not in faith. If you don't believe in God, then for sure you're having to accept this one possible solution on faith. And if you don't lack faith, then I guess it's not a satisfactory answer, but it is indeed an answer. Now, one thing about this is that to create a material universe, it requires that you have a creator that is outside the realm of time, matter, and space. Even scientists who study cosmology will say this, that they now understand that whatever it was that created our time, space, and matter universe is a power or force stronger than our universe, outside of our universe, and is not limited to our universe. And scientists would say it's an impersonal random force. A theologian would say it has intelligent design and is God. So the point there is if you're going to have a created item, you can't use something that's in that item to claim it is the creator. I had some things about some of his fallacies. He mentioned begging the question, and all that really means is you're trying to explain your question with an answer. And what this looks like would be something like, everyone wants a smartphone because it's the hottest new phone on the market. Well, that's a circular. It's hot because everybody wants it. Everybody wants it because it's hot. Okay, why really is it one or the other? But that's an example of begging the question. And you can see what I mean. It's sort of a circular reasoning. So therefore, this guy has set up an infinite loop argument, but it's his own argument that is showing the flaws.
Welcome to Romans Road, the podcast of me, Eddie Roman. This is where we talk about evangelism and apologetics and all kinds of Christian stuff.
Ray Comfort here. If you haven't yet subscribed to this podcast, please take a moment to do so now. On your phone's podcast app, search for Romans Road, and when you find it, hit subscribe. It's free, and by doing so, you'll get all episodes past, present, and future. Then when you're finished, head over to livingwaters.com for a huge collection of evangelism videos, articles, tracks, and resources to help you share the gospel with those around you. That's livingwaters.com.
Thanks for listening to Romans Road. If you want to learn how to evangelize, check out my book, Search and Rescue, available at eddieroman.com. On my website, you'll also find videos and other things to encourage you to preach the gospel to your friends and family. That's eddieroman.com. See you next time.
Okay, and there we have it. Some of my responses. I try to keep things short. I try to keep things as close to the point as possible, because we don't really know the full scope that these debates or lectures were given, only the small snippet that's there. And I couldn't tell you who these people are. I couldn't tell you the background, only what's there. And I try to keep it addressed to what they said, and I try to keep it limited to their arguments. Hopefully you'll see that we tried to be fair and courteous about it. They sometimes do make good points, but they often don't apply them correctly when it comes to matters of God and religion. And that's all I have for today. So stay tuned. Next week should be our usual Truth Exposed. So that ought to be a good one coming up. We're doing the studying through the book of John. And after that, we'll be back on our Quest for Truth schedule. I haven't heard any responses back from my archive show I did from Alive and Still Married. If anyone out there enjoyed that type of format, like I said, we did about 30-some-odd shows, and I could maybe re-post them. Or we could just pick up and start from scratch. But I need to know. It's kind of like, what is it, Peter Pan and Tinkerbell. You got to cheer or Tinkerbell is going to not, I forget what the situation was, but you got to cheer for some of the big hits of feedback for bringing Robin back for doing shows. I guess that's all I got. I'm going to sign off. This is your host, Keith, saying I am out of here. See you next week. Thanks for listening, and please do tell a friend about us.
Visit life-truth.com, the new home for all our Quest for Truth shows. While you're there, subscribe to the shows. Sign up for email notifications. Send an email or leave a voicemail at 401-753-4844. Everything Nathan Caldwell does can be found at Protectors of the Book, facebook.com/protectorsofthebook. Music for the show provided by permission of Kevin Zerbe, zerbinator.wordpress.com. May God richly bless you. If you don't know Jesus, your greatest need is a Savior. Thanks for listening.